The following Real Assets Advisor podcast is a production of its parent company, IREI, Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For your most curated, intelligent news, data, and insights, visit realassetsadvisor.com and sign up today for our complimentary newsline and magazine using our new chat feature.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.
My name is Tin Chuk Ng. I'm the head of investments for Cottonwood Investment Manager. We are a vertically integrated investment manager headquartered in Los Angeles with assets all over U.S. Prior to that, I have came into real estate through development and then started my cross-border real estate investments career approximately 15 years ago, doing transactions in Europe, U.S., as well as Asia.
And this is Mike Consa, your host. It's good to have Tin Chuk with us. And Tin Chuk, I know that you have been an advocate of cross-border investing these days. And I wanted to ask you to summarize what you see as the opportunity in cross-border investing in real estate. Why is it a good time to be doing that in your estimation?
Of course. I think cross-border investments, the benefits really comes in twofold. Of course, I can say the usual, it's diversifications and it's spreading of risk, and you get to capture investment opportunities in areas where if you're just focused domestically, you might not be able to get access to. But I think one of the most interesting aspects of cross-border investments in real estate is seeing over the last 20 years, real estate markets in different parts of the world learning from each other in terms of product type. So, for example, multifamily is a very well-established real estate product type in U.S. and historically have done very well, very institutional and great. That, as a product type, does not exist and probably still existed only in a very limited extent, even in very mature markets like U.K. or continental Europe, and certainly to a much lesser extent in Asia. Similarly, we have trends like this in retail. And I think it's understanding how some of these product types that one picks up and learn in a specific real estate markets help inform sort of the next phase or next trend in the real estate markets in a different country creates real interesting opportunities for an investor to spot the next trend. Logistic is a very good example. Again, a very well-established product type in U.S. and has grown to be one of the biggest asset class in U.S. in the last 20, 25 years. And when I first started looking at investment opportunities in Europe and back in early 2000s, and then subsequently in the around 2007 in Asia, in the logistic product type, that almost is either non-existent or the product type in itself, it was so underdeveloped by comparison. Fast forward to where we stand today, it's probably, again, one of the hottest product type with very institutional grade assets in both of these areas, in both Europe as well as in Asia. So it's very interesting to see how a developed product type from one country or one part of the world inform the development of real assets in other parts of the world and provide interesting opportunities for investors who focus on structural changes in the real estate asset class.
So I can imagine, you know, a U.S. investor or investors in the major markets of Europe constantly bumping up against one another. It's a crowded market. It's a well-developed market. Everybody's basically trading assets. You're trying not to pay too much for assets. Meanwhile, there's this very vast world beyond that, if I'm understanding you correctly, there are some opportunities there where you're not going to be bumping into everybody left and right. It's not going to be the same old players. There's some real opportunities to develop asset classes within real estate that don't currently exist in a really fulfilled form. So along those lines, and you know, you check me on that if I've misunderstood you, but if you were to talk to us about the continents, countries, and specific cities that are the most opportune right now, what would you identify? And and maybe pair property type or types with those specific countries or cities?
Sure. I think in terms of opportunity, as far as asset class is concerned, I continue to think that there is a very interesting opportunity in Europe as well as in Asia, and depends on pockets in these areas in the multifamily space. It is still a product type where it has started. It was introduced in the UK markets, probably talking about 15 years back plus, and it's still a product type that's evolving and growing. So that I think in the long term, there is quite a opportunity in that area, in this particular asset class in outside of US. But
now which one are you referring to, Tinchuk? Which property type?
Multifamily.
Multifamily, okay.
Multifamily, yeah, because it's the whole concept of rental in the residential space is a lot less evolved or less institutionalized. It's not to say that it doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist in a very institutional format. We have seen evolution and changes in that space slowly in the last 10, 15 years, a lot of it in UK, for example, and to a certain extent in more developed markets in Asia. But I think that concept that this as a multifamily as a product type will continue to evolve significantly in those markets. Another one that actually I think is interesting, and I'm as a product type that I think right now, even though logistic is really hot, everyone wants to invest in it, and I think that comment applies to the entire world, whether you're in Australia or in Asia or in US or Europe, is as a class is, you know, certainly high up on many investors' lists. I personally think there is still a lot of format evolutions that we are experiencing in US where it will provide interesting opportunities in areas in Asia as well as in Europe that I think will help inform that next phase of be it last mile logistic or big box distribution center in different parts of outside of US that I think would continue to be an interesting sector to focus on as these sectors in outside of US continue to get institutionalized. One sort of not new product type, but I think one trend that I have been wondering if it's going to evolve further, and it's in Asia, what we see in the retail space is a much higher ratio, typically a much higher ratio in terms of tendency being some in one way or the other being food related, be it supermarkets or restaurants or that F&B concept. And compared to US product type, typically the ratio is substantially higher. And I'm starting to see some signs in US retail, and by no means I'm a retail expert, but it's interesting to see in the whole concept of experiential or experience oriented retail taking hold in US real estate. There's a side of me that do wonder, is the flow going to be going in reverse where we're going to start to see a substantially higher percentage of F&B ratio in retail assets in US as well. So the flow really go both ways.
Interesting. So grocery anchored retail I know has done very well. But then of course you have restaurants. When you talk about F&B, my mind goes to restaurants as well, but restaurants mm-hmm. can be very volatile. I mean, they come and they go very mm-hmm. quickly. The taste change, the chef leaves, the money gets mismanaged. That can be volatile, and they don't usually take a great deal of space. So beyond the supermarket that would anchor, a retail center, and restaurants, which again, mm-hmm. you know, that footprint can be, obviously if you have a whole slate of them, that's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else in the F&B category other than what I've mentioned that you would point to, or is that really kind of the bulk of it?
One part that I think is that makes me wonder if it is going to grow further is food courts. Food court mm-hmm. is a big component, typically in retail center in Asia, pretty much across the board. It's only a matter of, it's 45% of the total retail space or more. And I'm starting to see that much more elaborate food court concepts starting to develop in some retail center in U.S. And there's a side of me that asks, is that a lesson that's learned from elsewhere in Asia or in other retail centers internationally as well?
Now, I've heard you refer to institutional investors a couple of times, and obviously they have major real estate funds that they invest in. If you're talking about, say, the individual, the retail investor, are there publicly traded securities that actually present themselves as good opportunities in overseas investing? And does that animal exist to the extent that you would say you're getting a piece of really what I'm talking about here and doing it through securities? Or does it really have to be more a private direct investing through almost like private equity real estate funds?
I think that somewhat depends on your investment horizon. In terms of the public markets, in both domestic as well as internationally, obviously you have REITs, you have developers, stocks. Historically, what I have seen is that on the public side, particularly for shorter investment horizon, the public traded securities in real estate space tends to follow closer to securities, to the equities performance within the public space. Whereas in longer, when your longer investment horizon is when you see them, I guess, reflecting the performance of the underlying asset more. So I think the opportunity exists. It's somewhat dependent on one's investment horizon. If you're looking for real estate from a diversification perspective and really looking for the decoupling between public markets and or say securities and or the equities markets or bond markets from real estate, then I do think that probably private equity real estate funds is going to provide that in a more effective manner.
Interesting. So when things get tough out there, when the economies, when global economies start to get ragged, or people start to think, hey, there's some signs here that things might not work out, it does seem that the investors become more insular. They'll tend to say, you know, there's plenty of real estate right here in the United States, or there's plenty of real estate right here in Western Europe. Why are we going to get into this adventurism overseas, especially since I don't feel like I understand it as well, and I'm concerned about transparency. I'm concerned about political volatility in some cases. What about, and I see that as kind of the resistance that sometimes people in your camp come up against, that, hey, there's great cross-border investing opportunities, but people can see that, and even sophisticated investors at times see that as a little exotic and something that they don't have quite the same feel for. What about that?
I think I certainly agree with a lot of that assessment. It's not for everyone. However, I think what is offered by investing in foreign real estate is the structural change that we previously talked about in specific asset class or the real estate capital market space, that are lessons learned in U.S. that could be applied elsewhere. And that's when you have very attractive investment opportunities in these foreign markets, where we have already seen it happen in U.S. kind of a sense of how it will play out in the foreign markets. One example is for that I've seen before in 2004, when in Germany, for example, the domestic markets at the time was the capital markets that historically have funded a lot of real estate developments. For a variety of reasons, was no longer there. And we saw U.S. institutional capital starting to look at that particular space, starting with fortress buying in the residential space. And what was interesting is that they were able to capture a structural change, call it a falling apart of the domestic capital markets, and be able to capture that very unique opportunity that created tremendous return, which would be hard to replicate in a much more efficient markets like the U.S. So I think that's one thing that is will continue to be interesting, and I think worth investors worth investors' time to explore in the foreign real estate market. Not to mention the usual, again, diversifications and ability to be able to capture, particularly in some emerging markets, the tremendous growth in some of these emerging markets.
Now, you know, I want to ask you about red flags that people should be looking out for when they're investing in foreign real estate. But I want to apply it to our current environment, because right now you're saying cross-border investing in real estate, there's opportunities there. We're staring down the barrel of inflation. Of course, real estate's seen as an inflation hedge by many people. Higher interest rates. Are there any other macroeconomic factors you're looking at right now that you would say, I don't like this? I don't like what I'm seeing in terms of this or that, but nonetheless, these cross-border investment opportunities are still good, and they're protective for a portfolio. And then maybe even go beyond that. I'm sorry to ask a compound question here, but then beyond that, maybe talk about, we're not seeing it now, but red flags I would certainly be looking out for that would shy me away from the argument that cross-border investing is good right now, the environment's good, are this, that, and the other thing. So I'm sorry for the kind of complex, long-winded question, but you eat and breathe this stuff, Tinchuk, so I know you're up to it.
Thank you for being very kind. I think it's fair to say the whole interest rate environment, I think that one is probably across the board in terms of global real estate. It's something that is high up on all real estate investors' mind. I wouldn't say that we are necessarily very concerned about it right now, but it's something that we are tracking closely. I do think that, interestingly enough, in markets where I think that it has a less efficient real estate capital markets compared to U.S., the decoupling of how real estate is being traded, it's probably, I wouldn't say it's entirely decoupled from the interest rate risk or the real estate capital markets risk, but it does provide an interesting, again, opportunity for people to use it as a diversification tool. But again, investing in foreign real estate or in any cross-border, whether it's U.S. going into Asia or Asia coming into U.S., there's the learning curve is substantial. So what I oftentimes advise investors is it worthwhile paying that type of be it expense or time and energy to learn how to invest in foreign real estate compared to the potentially lower return or less diversified return that one could get in domestic market. And I think that's makes it easier for institutional investors to do the cross-border bit, because I think typically their investment sizing is much larger, and also their ability to pay for some of the costs associated with the learning cost is higher than your typical retail investor. So it's really, I would say, on the cross-border piece, typically is more efficient and effective for cross-border investors to capture opportunities like that. That's not to say that there aren't a real estate vehicle that is distributed through the financial institutional channels that a regular, you know, retail investors cannot get access to. But then again, there is some transactional cost associated with that one needs to be aware of as well.
So by contrast, talk about the green lights when this indicators you see that are indicating to you and to investors that now's a good time to go cross border. I think you may have mentioned some of them, but what are they currently, and what other green lights might you be looking for to turn from yellow to green, let's say, or from red to green?
I think one thing that from a cross-border perspective, asking the questions of what product type naturally flourish under globalizations. I think that's i.e. lean towards logistics, and specific asset class would be one of the green lights that I would consider is a good area to focus on when one looks cross border, because that's in areas like logistics is such an essential part of how the real estate service that particular service the logistic industry, and thus I think it's going cross border becomes a an essential component for both for the industry as well as that real estate asset class. So any lessons learned or any barrier of entries that one has to cross, it will remain useful, likely remain useful in the long run as well. I think the other areas that I would say that I would focus on is looking at how human behavior tends to trend towards. I think experiential oriented retail is one that I keep going back to that we see has played out successfully in different continents as a product type. So those are areas where I think there is a common denominator in the way each generation behaves and the way they like to live. And I think capturing those type of themes in when one decides what to invest in terms of foreign real estate or even domestic real estate will be helpful factors to look at when one makes investment choices between different asset classes.
True or false, if you don't have boots on the ground in the overseas market you're looking to invest in, you have no business investing there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a true?
I think if you do, then is your best going through a investment manager or an operator that has a presence in that domestic market. It is real estate at the end of the day is a very domestic product type. So you need that operating capability domestically.
So if you're looking for a partner in a foreign market, what is it that you want to see from them in terms of, okay, you've got a presence there, mm-hmm. you've got boots on the ground. But beyond that, you can't just have warm bodies there. They have to have done something or be involved in something. What are they looking for? What does an investor need to be looking for in terms of a really good presence?
Right. I think presence is one thing, and what kind of presence is another. The type of presence or the teams that particular manager has in a domestic market has to go with the way a domestic market is being. Has to go with the way the real estate industry is structured in that domestic market. So, for example, if you look at even very evolved or very sophisticated real estate market in Hong Kong, that's an example. Extremely liquid, very very evolved. And yet, if you look at the private equity real estate space in Hong Kong for real estate, it's extremely small. Majority of the real estate activities are carried out by the major developers, and then you have some retail traders in the residential space, or to a lesser extent, commercial condo space. So you could have presence there. But if the presence does not understand, if the presence in that domestic market does not understand how that local market works and does not have relationships with developers in that particular space, it will make it very difficult for them to be effective in making investments in those markets. And oftentimes I see, because U.S. is a very, the way the real estate industry is set up in the U.S. is extremely segmented, is very well established. Everyone knows if you're a private equity real estate investment manager, what your roles and responsibilities are. If you're a developer, what your roles and responsibilities are. A lot of times in a foreign market, it's a lot more blurred. So an ability for a team that can adapt to that local environment is enormously important, and not just take a very call it U.S. mentality and think that is the way it has to operate in foreign markets, and that's usually when it gets challenging for the for that team to be effective and produce, you know, proper investment return for the investors.
In terms of timeline, how patient does a capital need to be? Does it map with the United U.S. or Western European or Japanese investment, or are some of these less developed, like say frontier or emerging markets, require more patient capital, longer timelines?
I think more patient capital have a better chance of capturing outsized absolute returns in these markets. A lot of it has to do with, you know, some of these markets, it's hard to fully underwrite the risk, particularly in emerging markets, and yet the long-term fundamentals is very strong. So if you take a typical U.S. investment structure that is usually highly geared and apply it to a foreign real estate market where you potentially, because of the gearing structure, you run into cash flow issues and does not have the capability to ride out the waves, it could becomes an impediment to producing proper real estate returns in those markets. And also, I think a lot of these, particularly the developing markets, the market itself is still evolving. So you get the benefits of both the evolutions or the improvements at the asset level, as well as the overall economics improvements in those markets. And that's, again, all that could only be captured effectively if you have a decent investment horizon.
Just in terms of number of years, I mean, would you think in terms of a nice 10-year placement, are you thinking in terms of even more patient capital than that? I realize that you're not going to apply this to all investments, but how patient? What's the outside timeline?
As an investor, I tend to go the dumbbell strategy. You either north of 7 to 10 years investment horizon. That's be it US or elsewhere, that I think it's would allow you to fully capture and the benefits from a real estate cycle, as well as the economic cycles in that domestic markets. Or you go the other way around, which is, you know, keep it under a very short executions within that 2 to 3 years range, where you're purely there to capture a major structural change in that market. And So I tend to like deals that's focused on either end of the spectrum when it comes to PRE investments.
Got it. So in closing, what else would you point to? What else should our listeners know that maybe I haven't addressed?
One of the main things that would be helpful when one thinks about real estate investments is actually not just asking in terms of whether this is a good sector to invest in. Obviously, that's important. But I think a lot of successful real estate investments comes in coupling, a proper coupling between the requirements of a particular type of investor or particular investors with the real estate. And by that, I mean, for example, there are real estate investors that has a very long investment horizon, and I think the an ability to ride through major fluctuations in be it interest rate or ride through the ability variations in the underlying assets itself, and I think that making sure in those cases coupling them with the real estate opportunities that have a similar type of called risk profile and cash flow profile is important. What I oftentimes see as an issue, again, domestic investing or foreign investing, is to think that purely from a deal perspective, and do not necessarily ask that in the life cycle or in the investment horizon within this particular transactions, what are some of the major variations that one might experience if you are, for example, investing in a golf course community developments in a pre-development stage. A lot of things could change in that 10 years horizon, and you might be buying on that deal on a very good basis early on, but you know, is a pre-development deal. There's major fluctuations that could occur from a permitting perspective. There's major fluctuations that could occur in terms of financing environment throughout the, you know, probably 5 to 7 years that cycle that you'll be looking at in this development, making sure that as an investor that goes with your ability to ride through those waves. I've seen many times that investors, particularly in the high net worth or retail investor space, where they focus so much on, hey, is this a good basis to buy into? And when the capital call times comes for that deal, which it happens quite often in a development deal or in a value add transactions, and that becomes a pressure point for the investors because that's not necessarily fully understood or does not necessarily aligned with that particular investors' risk profile. There is oftentimes I get asked that a lot with some of our investors that sometimes on a cross-border basis we see investors being very willing to take risk that sometimes domestic investors is not willing to take. In 2007, you have a lot of 2008, 2009 timeframe, you have a lot of cross-border investors coming to U.S. buying in real estate, just parking the positions. And you know, you could ask the questions, is that a good move? Is that not a good move? For many of these super high net worth investors' perspective, I would argue that's probably it's a very good move for them because their requirements for cash flow distributions or an immediate capital appreciations in the short run, it's not as high compared to some other investors, be it retail investors or even some investment funds out there. So they have the ability to ride through those waves. And it from their vanishing point, that is an appropriate real estate investments. And it's, I think, taking a simple mindset of saying that something is good, it's you know, one particular investment type is good or bad. Sometimes people tend to forget that whether it's complementary to one's investment portfolio or one's investment risk appetite or not, and that's an important one to keep in mind as with every investment decision that that one makes. I oftentimes joke about it that it's like thinking for someone who has a closet that's purely have black clothes, and for that particular person probably buying a red dress or, you know, red pair of pants is very dangerous, but there's nothing about this red dress or red pair of pants that's necessarily higher risk for people who is used to wearing colors. So I think bearing in mind that whether something, an investment's just like a piece of clothing, whether it fits oneself or not from an investment perspective, it's essential in that decision process.
Tinchuk, I know you're very busy because I've been chasing you through your attaché for at least 2 months to get you on the program and talk about cross-border real estate investing. So I really do appreciate that you finally gave me the time, and I appreciate the intel that you shared with us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.